Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their expertise with us so that we can grow too. My name is Gary Lafferty, your host and founder of Authority Accelerators, where we drive more revenue and sales for tech leaders by elevating them from just being an expert in their field to the authority in their field so they can do more choosing of who they work with rather than the ones being chosen. On this episode, I couldn't be more pleased to have Andrew with us today, and we're going to be talking things about raising prices, how do you stand out, what your messaging is, and how you do not have to follow the crowd in order to grow your business. So if you're in business to grow for the long term, make sure you stick around for this episode because Andrew is going to be dropping a load of great insights for us today. So without further ado, Andrew, it's an absolute pleasure and an honor to have you here today. Why don't you start by introducing yourself and tell us what is it that you actually do?
Thanks, Gary. Pleasure to be on your show. Thanks for the invite. Well, as Gary said, my name's Andrew Hewitt, founder and CEO of YoDev. And we are based in Winston-Salem, and we are an agile development shop focusing on custom solutions for our clients.
Fantastic. So let's dive a little bit into that first, but I want to go backwards as well as forwards there. So before you started YoDev, where did you come from? Tell us a little bit about your history and then how you got the inspiration to start YoDev.
Sure. So I'll give you the accelerated version. I have always been a floater. I jump around to passions all the way throughout my adolescence into my professional career. That actually led me to be in a metal band and tour around and all this other stuff. But then like it also, I found a passion for business. And as I was like touring around and doing music, I was taking business classes. I ended up with a company called CTS Cement Rapid Set. They were a fast growing startup sort of cement company that offered employee stock ownership. It's where I really caught the entrepreneur bug because I got to see my efforts not only paid out in salary, but I got to see it in what the stock of the value of the company was just from, you know, my sales and my marketing that I was putting into that role. So as I mentioned, I was in sales and marketing right in that role there. And I was, jumping around territories, traveling around, moving up the ladder, technical sales rep to district sales rep to potential regional sales rep. And the travel just kept going on and on and on. And I really wanted to get into the office and help with marketing. And as a lot of people know, dev, technology, software, especially marketing tech and software nowadays is really big when it comes to marketing. So I just dove into podcasts, self-learning, studying, wanted to get into that office of my previous company and be in the marketing department. I got blockaded a couple times with degree, you know, not having the marketing communications degree, not having this, not having that. So in 2017, I actually just went out on my own and started being a freelance digital marketing consultant. Trial, error, partnerships, failures, startups, and everything in between. I ended up finding that development was just something that I can do easily. So I was able to excel at web dev, WordPress, moving into full stack engineering, all the way up to working with contracts with State Farm, taking side gigs. And what happened was I was able to now have my natural ability of sales, marketing, and networking mixed with this new skill that I learned, which is full stack engineering. And in 2019, that's when we went all in, like no more marketing services, no more consulting. It was straight up dev. And that's when we just took off. And all of our competitors who were marketing agencies and freelance marketing consultants were now contracting YoDev to be their developers. And it just kept compounding and compounding until today, where we have a team of 14, client list of 70 and growing, and a core client list of like agile clients that we work with from everything from their website all the way up to their full stack, you know, web application and solutions for their internal teams. We are, you know, up there with, you know, at least six to seven of those right now that on a monthly basis, we're pushing, you know, agile into their organization and they're getting a better mindset, working with YoDev and just growing at a really fast rate.
Well, I think that's a fascinating story there. And I think you are an absolute classic example of focus, where you said, well, this is what we're going to go. We're going to go all in. We're not trying to please everybody and do everything that they want. Because as we all know, if you do that, you're not going to really serve anybody. You're just scratching at the surfaces. But your real growth has really come down to focusing, as you say, on the full stack. That's what's your approach to business. So you've obviously got a lot of passion in it, and I can see how excited you are. So what really excites you most? I mean, this is really good when we get to talk to leaders like you about passion and excitement. What excites you most about the work you're doing right now, especially with your MPV client experience app?
Yeah, I would say the thing right now at the stage of my business that gets me really excited is when I see that we're serving, you know, 6, like I said, to 7 mid-sized businesses that are in a high growth stage. And we're able to help them come up with custom solutions that they're hitting bottlenecks as they scale, whether it be their lead acquisition funnel, their ERP systems, whatever it might be, they're hitting bottlenecks. And having YoDev as their agile development partner to be their tech arm to come in, plan projects, execute projects, and then see the outcomes of those projects when they break through those challenges and then unlock another level of growth because their technology can handle it. That's what lights me up. And it's lighting me up now more than ever, because I used to be the one that have to be at the head of every single project, making sure that those outcomes came. And now I'm really only on 1 or 2 projects that I want to be a part of. Like, it's like they interest me enough to put my time onto it. And the team is taking care of the other ones. And I'm getting to see those success stories on a week-to-week basis. And it's not me always doing them.
Yeah, I think this is the key thing. Success brings choices. Choices bring freedom. And the thing is, the more successful you become in business, the more choices you actually have. I want to dive more into growth and sales and positioning strategies a little bit later on in this episode. But I want to really talk about the industry before we do. Let's talk about what trends are happening. So you've obviously got your finger on the pulse in the industry. What trends in enterprise web development, custom software, and DevOps are you most excited about seeing coming down the turnpike?
The most exciting part is what I'm noticing that, so to understand and like really understand where I'm coming from on this question, on this answer to this question, let's go back a couple of years where, like, you know, our target avatar per se is a VP of marketing, director of marketing, has a small in-house team that needs to outsource vendors. So, you know, go back 5, 10 years or so, even longer. The only option was an agent, a creative or marketing agency that handled dev and things of that nature, or a full-on software tech shop that's gonna be charged huge amounts of money for like a custom-built solution, and there was nothing in between. So now, when we're fast-forwarding now, what we're seeing as a trend is our best clients are not leveraging big, large agencies anymore. They're leveraging smaller, more focused expert agencies, like, for instance, YoDev as an agile development shop. And then there's other ones that just focus on PPC, that just focus on SEO. And then we all collaborate as external vendors, almost like we're becoming a part of the client's team. That trend in and itself is why YoDev is growing at such a fast rate right now, because all the clients that were going to the big agencies and paying tons and tons of money for a turnkey, you know, solution that encompasses every aspect of their marketing or ops area, now is like becoming this big bloated clunky model where it's like, if you have these lightning fast, lightning responsive experts that know to stay in their lane and know what they're doing, and you can coordinate them, you can get so much more done at such a faster rate and even a lower cost. So that trend in and itself that we see in our industry for like how our client mindset is shifting towards technology first, caring about automation, caring about AI, and then understanding that, hey, we can't just hire an agency as a one-all, you know, solve everything type of a vendor. We need to start hiring some experts that focus in certain areas. Those two things combined is what's really the catalyst for our growth right now.
Yeah, we can really see that, as you said, that trends are changing. Companies' attitudes towards things are changing. So let's talk about, I know you also work with private equity-backed companies, and they often need rapid scalability. Their challenge is, although they need rapid scalability, they're like the Titanic. They're like these big oil tankers that take forever to make decisions and change. So what challenges do you see, even though they need rapid scalability, what challenges do you see in helping these companies grow, keyword, efficiently today?
Yeah, I really think that one of the things that a lot of companies, because we've been in projects that have had both. They're like, they want everything done really fast, and they just want to get their features out the door. They want to do this, they want to do that, and they don't care about things like automated testing or QA or a deployment pipeline that's really standardized across their organization and things like that. But you know, like when you really want to focus in on like, you know, that area, having solid DevOps, quality assurance processes, and, you know, putting in the work to refactor when you can, like when there's time to, like, you know, and be in more of a proactive state versus reactive is going to be key for breaking through those challenges and growing. Because there's nothing worse than spending a ton of money on this new feature for your tech stack, and then, you know, 3 months down the line, things are breaking that you didn't even know. Maybe, like, you know, it's not that new feature. It's because you rolled that new feature out and it messed with something that it's dependent on. So like, that's where things like automated testing and having those processes in place in your QA and deployment pipelines are like something that companies of that size don't always think about, or they know about it and it's like, well, you know, we don't have the budget to like spend all this extra time doing that. Just get our fixes done, get our new features done and move on. Which is fine. It's just going to create more and more tech debt later on that costs you more money. So that's what I would say, is focus on that stuff, that, you know, the DevOps and QA stuff always. It should always be going underlying as you're pushing new updates.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes total sense in it. And it's almost you can be a solution provider, but you're almost now, what we're seeing of where companies succeed is being more than a solution provider. It's actually showing them how to buy, almost being the holistic partner to them in helping them grow, helping them know how to buy and what to buy and when to buy and the reason for doing it. You know, so rather than just coming and say, yep, we can provide this solution. Oh, you want it fast? You can have it fast. Where are the dangers from doing so? So very much acting in their best interest as opposed to just being a service or product provider.
Yeah, we actually, just one second, I want to add one more note to that.
Go ahead.
So we had a situation where it was a pretty big enterprise web application. They had like this market that they had to go to where their app allowed them to create setups for their market and create deals. It was basically like a custom ERP CRM for their industry. And they had market coming up and they just wanted to push, like just keep pushing. And we said, hey, we should really take maybe a month like before the market to refactor your app, add in some automated testing for some of the most important features, because, you know, things are probably going to break. It's a big legacy Ruby on Rails application. And needless to say, like we pushed, we delivered, but then they were hitting us up on the weekend paying surge pricing because things were breaking while they were at the market. And then that set us up for a much bigger contract after that initial engagement, because, hey, we're going to take 2 months and completely refactor and optimize your DevOps workflows so that, you know, come 2025, we'll be constantly working on new things on top without worrying about breaking the things that are already in place. So just, you know.
Yeah,
just,
that is a really important story to share, isn't it? Because sometimes you just got to let them fall and let them make their mistakes rather than argue the point and say, hey, and I love what you said, hit you up the weekend, you're going to pay surge prices. The more you want to do that, the more inefficient this becomes. So It then sets it up, you know, and again, showing them, sometimes you just let them fall by their own sword, haven't you? And
They
grow from that. So let's talk about growth. Yeah, I mean, you've built we've talked before and we've talked off camera, you know, and when we do talk, one of the things I get excited about when talking to you is this constant pipeline that you have. Many tech firms have this feast and famine. I wouldn't call it mentality. It's almost like a way of life. They feed the pipeline, they open up the faucet, clients come out, they turn the faucet off and they start working. And then when they go back to the faucet, there's nothing there because they haven't filled their pipeline. You've always built a really strong sales pipeline where other tech firms have suffered. So what has been for you, would you say, Andrew, the most effective strategy for consistently attracting not just clients, high value clients?
Yeah. So first and foremost, and I tell, like, whether you're in a tech firm or any startup business for matter, or a smaller business for that sake, you need to be embedded in your local community. So first and foremost, you know, a lot of people say, hey, you know, have a good website, have a good way to onboard the leads, pay ads, drive sales, whatever, social media, LinkedIn outreach, like, you know, that sort of stuff. That's all great. And I feel like that's like, you know, twigs and kindle to add to the fire as it's already burning. But if you can build and establish either your, and I would actually say double down, like if you're the owner of the firm, you need to have a personal brand. Like they need to, I know like, you know, 10 years ago, they might've said, you don't want to be tied. Like you got to be separated from your business. Like your brand is your brand. But like now, like as the economy is shifting, you need a personal brand in this economy to really stand out. So when your personal brand is tied to your business and then you're embedded in the local community, whether that be working with nonprofits, working at your local co-working space and just getting to know everybody who's playing in the game, that sort of acts as like your base, because what happens is you start to build up a really solid referral network. And then I also, as I was growing, and again, this is like a founder's network thing. I think that's like one of the big keys of like startups, right? If one or two of the founders have a good network, that adds to the investment pool, because like people are going to be like, hey, we want to invest in them because they have all these connections. So another thing, I know a lot of tech firms and software shop owners, they either have a nice career, you know, leading up to starting their own shop and they have connections in the industry, or they may have taken contracts with tech firms. Like, you know, I took some with like Tech Systems and a few others that are known in the States. So like taking those contracts and then not looking at it like, hey, this is just experience for me, this is money. Like you meet some amazing individuals when you do those contracts. Like you meet other engineers, you meet scrum masters, you meet marketing experts, you meet all these people. And, you know, at every contract you take, you should make sure that, you know, you stay in touch with the people that you know, like, hey, I want to perform at their level. And almost every single full-time job, contract, and anything in between of like, you know, during this journey, I can go back to a story and be like, hey, yeah, I'm doing business with that person now. I'm doing business with that person now. And then to top it all off with, for the local networking part, find yourself a really solid networking group of like, and I'm talking like, you know, I'm in a CEO peer group that, you know, our YoDev is a little over six, you know, or seven figures. Like we're like on the fringe, close to it, going over, like we're on our way. But like, you know, we have CEOs in the group that are doing close to 100 million. And then, you know, we have others in the network that are just within the network as advisors that have, you know, even more like 8, 10, 11 figure businesses. And that's another key thing, because I feel like as soon as my network around me, like, you know, I see it, wow, it's possible. Like he's over there doing a $25 million business. Like it feels like, you know, my capacity is now, my tank's a lot bigger now that it can fill up. So that's just the base. That if you can establish yourself and your brand and everybody knows you in your local community, and then, you know, like this past weekend, YoDev sponsored Techstar Startup Weekend here in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. We mentored. Our team actually won the pitch competition, which was really cool, the team that we helped out. And like just doing those types of things and you know, like being able to do that stuff now with that credibility, you know, sweat equity that I put in the past is like makes that promo that much more valuable. And we're getting tons of like leads and like contacts and connections on LinkedIn from that event this weekend. But all of that, like, you know, that doesn't happen if you don't have a solid network there. And now we're focusing on just everything, right? So website, we get organic bookings. LinkedIn, we get people connecting with us and booking a call. And then our referral networks. So like we have multiple channels now, but it's all built from that big, you know, ever burning fire. That's the network and, you know, my founder's network, essentially.
That is such a valid point there, Andrew, that I think for those listening here, certainly that's a great insight, because certainly in tech, there is a tendency to hang around tech, be around tech, be the cleverest person in the room around tech. But what you've taken that on, your background in sales and marketing, that given you the edge for your growth, is saying, look, I'm going to be humble. If I'm only doing six, seven figures, I'm going to hang around with those doing multi seven figures. I'm going to be hanging around with those. I'm going to stand on the shoulders of giants. And they don't have to be tech, because the fundamentals of running and growing and scaling a business is the same no matter what business or industry you're in. You're the expert in DevOps, they're the experts in whatever, but standing on the shoulders of giants really does help grow a business. So let's talk about scaling. Scaling efficiency is a huge challenge for tech leaders, for many, many founders. They reach these plateaus, they reach these glass ceilings, it was invisible glass ceilings. Maybe it's $1 million, maybe it's $5 million. Maybe it's just getting past the first $500,000. Getting there is difficult. What has been your biggest bottlenecks in scaling YoDev and how are you overcoming them?
Yeah, so I would say our biggest bottleneck because we fixed it. The last time we spoke, we fixed the bottleneck. And the biggest bottleneck was how much load we could handle for like the amount of projects at once. And what was happening was we have one full-time PM who's great. He's like, you know, he's on our leadership team. He's awesome. But his role was really never defined because, you know, I procrastinated the project management role forever. It was just something I did not enjoy doing. I could serve customers and make sure that they're getting served. But like when it came to actually managing, planning, backlog grooming, meeting every morning with the team and making sure things are getting done, it just was not for me. I was more the developer mindset on that. Send in my stand-up notes and then get back to the issue I'm working on kind of a thing. So it was challenging. And then guess what? My project manager has to move. He's moving across the country and he needed extended time off. So what happened was it was the first time I was stepping back into the project management role to cover for him while he was out. And YoDev has grown like 10x since the last time I actually worked in the role. And I was able to see all the bottlenecks. I was like, okay, why are we, every time there's a client call, we're scrambling the day of to get the agendas ready? Why this? Why that? And then I was able to fill in the gaps. And then when he came back from PTO, we had our executive assistant get all the client agendas ready by Monday for him and the lead developer to go over and approve and review. And then also that'll help the team align on the work that had to get done this week because it aligned with the client status calls. We also revamped how our task management system works and we set up a priority system. And that was mainly me too, because like I was looking at all the team's work and it was just overwhelming of how much work there was. But then when you boil down to it and you create a process around, okay, what is priority right now for each team member? And then we set a priority scale and that changed everything. And then we're also going through EOS right now, which is Entrepreneurial Operating Systems. And the first part of EOS is your core values. And believe it or not, like YoDev really didn't have any core values until like 2 weeks ago. But then when we defined our core values and we said, okay, communication, client focused, accountability, team player. Whatever you're doing throughout the day is not aligned with that. Or if a task comes through ClickUp, which is our project management tool, and it's a client or it's a, you know, something that's like somebody on the team needs something because they're blocked. Guess what? If it falls into those core values, now that priority makes it urgent. And then you get that done first. And then all the other stuff that's not as high priority, you can focus on that later. So our core values have become our guide, like our guiding star, essentially. Yeah. And now the whole team knows about the core values. And I'm seeing the work that should be getting prioritized, like client issues and team helping each other unblock, like get me some assets kind of a thing, or get me a login. Like that could sit there and for 2-3 days, but like, wait, no, I got to be a team player. They need me. So those core values have been game changing for us to break through.
I think that's absolutely a fascinating thing that, again, those listening, those watching, EOS, the way that you can structure your business, almost then start really focusing on it rather than in it. There'd be many founders here who are still working in it. Doesn't matter if they're multi-seven figures, they'll still be working in it. And that's fine, but reevaluating what your core values are as a base before you start smashing them into the little rocks and the little pebbles so you can start working on stuff like that. It's a really, really important part for scaling. So let's talk a little bit. There's such a high demand for your services. You know, when you and I talk, nearly every time I talk to you, you break another barrier. And, you know, we were talking earlier about, well, you know what happens. If you've got too many clients, you've got to raise your prices and you've already reached that benchmark. You're raising your prices there. So with such a high demand for your services, Andrew, how do you balance bringing in new business while maintaining quality of service?
Okay, that's a great question. So what we did to tackle this problem essentially was, okay, there, you know, everybody, like I tried to avoid time, like don't work for your time. Don't, you know, like it's got to be value-based. Like, you know, and that's what a lot of the marketing agency world and like when I was sort of in that area, that's what they were going for, like value-based pricing and this sort of thing. I started looking at it differently with Yodev. Like our clients that are hiring Yodev, they are looking at resource utilization. So at the end of the day, if they scale and get sold, they need to replace Yodev with like either Yodev staying with them, or they're going to have full-time tech people come in and they need to have an idea of how much time these things are taking so that when they go and sell their business, they know whether or not that's an add back, like which is like something that like, hey, like, is this just a one-time cost so we can kind of take that off for your to calculate your EBITDA? Or is this something that we're going to have to hire somebody to fill in for? So what I found that what we do, they do care about the time. So when I reshifted our KPIs there, I was able to determine that to hit our goals for 2025, we need X amount of billable time per month, and billable time per month equals committed billable time monthly plus new billable time sold. So that kind of gives me two KPIs, one for my project manager to make sure that the committed billable time monthly is being fully utilized, and one for me as the salesperson right now for billable time sold, so that I know that, you know, and then that equals the total billable number. Now, those numbers are tied directly to our team's capacity. So like that number is not going to be able to go up over our capacity. I was able to break down our full-time employees and which percentage of their time is billable, their part-time employees, which percentage of the time is billable, our high-level, high-tech consulting firm that we place really, really high-tech talent, like what their actual billable time is, and then freelancer platforms if we have to have overflow. I have all that calculated down, and then we know exactly what numbers we need to hit in order to hit our goals from a revenue and profitability standpoint, but also not overload the team through capacity, because it's all tied, it all rolls up and it all ties into each other. And it's all driven by those KPIs, the billable time per month. And then I forgot this one. We have an average billable rate that we want to hit, because certain clients get discounts if they commit to larger sets of time. So we know like we got to hit a certain average hourly rate to you know, be on track for what we want to do.
Yeah, that's some really, really good points. So you've got both of those KPIs of, you know, making sure that you have and maintain that quality of service. So the ones you have sold are looking after it. And this is where that bottleneck for other tech companies tend to arise, is that you're overselling yourself. And if you're overselling yourself, you can't keep up with the demand. If you can't keep up with the demand, then you stop. And that's why we see the feast and famine, because it's just trying to, but if you're focused on the KPIs of those both, that both deserve to grow and both have to grow in order to be scalable, that's when you truly start breaking this kind of hockey stick growth in a company. So your business.
Just sway it into the increased pricing thing. That KPI average hourly rate, guess what? If you need to hit your goals and you see, wow, I got to bill 600 hours this month just to hit our goals, guess what? Bump that average hourly rate up like 30 or 40%, sometimes even just 10%, bump it up 10%. And wow, now we only have to bill 400 hours. Like you cut off. So like have dialing in, and this KPI might not be for everybody, but like if you can find your KPIs, the goal would be to, can you manipulate the KPI in either direction to make the outcome less, you know, less effort essentially. And like raising the price of that average hourly rate lowers the amount of billable time. So if you have a capacity issue, raise that average hourly rate per billable hour, and then your billable hours go down for what you need to hit every month in order to be profitable, in order to hit your goals.
Yeah, it's having that KPI target, is it? Knowing what those numbers are. And everybody here listening knows a KPI, but it's how, is what KPIs are important and how to utilize those KPIs as opposed to just reporting the KPIs, as you said. And if you, and then you can just reverse engineer it. You just know it. If you want to have more hours available, then you can't just bring them out of thin air. You have to calculate it. And as you said, raising prices. You and I are both advocates for raising prices for our services. Most people are scared of them. There's actually a way to do it properly. But if you do raise your prices, Not only do you grow, you scale, you get more numbers, and you keep some really great clients out of it as well when you do raise your prices, you know. So let's talk about keeping clients and getting clients. You've built your business largely through relationships, like you said, having a great network and referrals. But that, to a degree, is almost restrictive when it comes to growth, because referrals are just referrals. There's only so much referrals can go.
Yeah.
The network is your network, and as you keep on growing your network from there, what has been your other strategies of making your growth more scalable?
Yeah. So another strategy that we're doing is really just, so I talk about personal brand, but going through and like actually branding, I think, is another, just for instance, like I can put my logo on a spot, like that weekend that we just did, Startup Weekend, you can put your logo on as a sponsor. I didn't even have to actually be there, because to be honest, the leads that we got from that, they were just seeing YoDev on as a platinum sponsor of the event, and the logo stood out. Like, I walked up to a group of people at the event, and I had my YoDev hoodie on, and one of my old colleagues from back in the day, like, she's in and out of startups, she's doing that thing all the time, she's like, "Oh, Andrew, you're YoDev." Like, everybody was asking, like, "Who's YoDev?" So like the whole event was talking about YoDev. So like, you know, if you can get somebody who understands real branding, like, I went, my wife Allison is our marketing coordinator. She's been always, she's been in design marketing as her career, and she's on with YoDev, and she helped work with some brand experts and different experts to kind of help with the branding component of it. That strategy alone, I mean, we're getting organic leads, again, just from having our logo, just easy to just type in YoDev spelled the way that it is, and it just, everything comes up, and we just get calls booked constantly just from that. And then another strategy, I am doing YouTube and content. So I have a YouTube channel where I talk mainly to our target audience's pain points, like migrating a website, upgrading tech stack, the importance of DevOps, like, don't break your web app, like, follow these steps, like those sorts of things. And we're getting some traction, not only in views and engagement, but we're starting to see leads flow through there as well, which is nice. So content strategy. And then really just, you know, outside of that, you got to be prepared for when the leads come. So what's your process? What's the sales process? And that's something that I really take pride in, really refining what that customer experience is from when they book their first intro call, go through a discovery session, work their way down the pipeline until they get handed off to our project manager. That whole process is fully documented, and it's the same for every client. Just like our kickoff to QA to deployment to post-deployment, all those processes are exactly the same, so that we can control our customer experience, which increases our retention, which then increases more projects from that client after they close out their first project. So all of those strategies right there, I think if you can leverage, you know, branding, leverage content, marketing, setting yourself as an expert in the industry, and then make sure that your processes are efficient and they're consistent, and you can measure the different outcomes of the customer experience so that you can increase your retention rates, you won't ever have to worry about leads or sales if all that's fine and you're looking at it and you're improving it constantly.
It's a process, isn't it, Andrew? That, because you can't build a brand overnight. You can't build your content overnight. It's a process that takes months and months. But the great thing about, like you said, when we do content for clients, when we do YouTube and LinkedIn and events and podcasts like we're doing today, once they're on the internet, they're there.
Yeah.
The name stays. You stay. Your name stays. The founder's name stays. Everything stays. But then stacks. And that's one of the greatest things of doing it is to grow it and stack it so that your brand, your name, your personal name, your company name is always at the forefront.
That's a really good point. Think of all that, the brand and the strategies you're deploying that maybe doesn't feel like you're getting that traction right away. You got to look at it like it's an investment. I'm coming up on 9 years on this business, and it took me 8 years to start to get a solid flow of just like multi-channel leads. Like, it was always referrals for the first 5 years. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'd get excited, like an organic lead came through the website, and, you know, I was like, wow, this is cool. But now it's like, you know, I'm looking at reports. It's like, 5 leads from organic, 3 from social, 5 from referrals, 2 from LinkedIn. And like, you know, cause like LinkedIn's one that we keep a solid eye on because that's where all of our decision makers are hanging out. But anyway, like, exactly. You know, getting that lead source channel now is like, it's mind boggling, like looking up like, wow, it feels like it was overnight, but like, it was really a lot of hard work and grind and refinement of yourself and your brand and your company and who you want to be in the marketplace.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. It's not just about that. Tech tends to have this field of dreams mentality. If I build it, they will come. If I build it, it'll come because it's so great. But we know that's not the case at all, because all you're doing is falling into the big quagmire of all the other noise that's out there because everyone's saying exactly the same thing. So, you know, Andrew, to finish off, I've got 2 more questions for you. One's an easy question, one's a loaded question for you. I ask all my guests this. The easy question is this. You're a very growth-focused founder. We can all tell that. Anyone listening or watching this can just tell you're going places, you're going. What's your goal for the end of this year? You've got 3 quarters left. What's the big goal?
My goal for the end of this year is to, you know, break a million without any. So there's just no questions asked. Like, we are 7 figures, we're over. So that's number one. And then number two is having a solid like lead developer that I can just, I have them on now, but having a more full-time role so that I'm 100% out of the development. And if I do want to get into development, it's more on our products that we want to build. So me and the co-founder, who's more of the DevOps focused founder in the tech area, we are building products that are helping our team. So like, you know, things that are optimizing our processes, you know, customizing our customer experience and how they work and interact with YoDev. So I'm, you know, I would much rather be putting my engineering skill set into building products for the company versus having to work on client projects. So I'm almost out of there. I'm doing about 8 hours of client project work a week, but with the tail end of this big project coming to a close, it's looking like I'll be out of that pretty soon. But that's my big goal, is the lead developer's fully full-time running and I, you know, has a good handle and a good collaboration with my full-time project manager so that, you know, they can manage the dev team efficiently. And that'll allow me to step up into more leadership roles and the product side of things, so that focus in on building out some SaaS products.
Brilliant, brilliant. So here's your final question, Andrew. I have no doubt you're going to hit those goals anyway, without a shadow of a doubt. I have no doubt. Having known you and spoken to you many times now, I have no doubt you're going to do that. Final question, loaded question. You've had a great career so far, as you say, and building your business, sales and marketing, from the fast-growing cement, equity value, all the things that you have learned in your career. If you could give young Andrew Hewitt one piece of advice, it doesn't matter how young Andrew is. You could be at school, you could be beginning your business. One piece of advice about success in business. What would that piece of advice be?
This is going to be, I believe, the simplest answer to this. And it is, if you pay for coaching or mentorship, or you get a free coaching or mentorship somehow with somebody who's doing something better than you, don't question what they tell you to do. So young Andrew Hewitt paid into programs, scale your agency, scale this, scale that, but I wouldn't follow any of, like, I'd follow it for a little bit and then I'd take parts of it and go do my own thing. And some might say that, well, that was me piecing together my own path, but ironically, looking back now, all the things that I avoided, or like, I don't need to do that on this process, or I don't need to do this. If I was just doing it I'm doing them now. So like, it's like, just if you're going to pay for that, if you're going to pay for that kind of stuff, because I know a lot of my tech firm CEOs that I'm friends with, they're paying for, you know, EOS coaches or, you know, just coaches in different areas. Like, just do the program that you're paying for. Give it 100% your all. And then if it doesn't work and you followed those processes, then pivot. But like, don't get into the process and half do it. Like, you know, if you're paying for that stuff to scale your business, do it 100% the right way. Because I have a feeling that if I would have listened to some of the mentors and coaches that helped me along the way without being too hard-headed and without going in my own direction, I would be here a lot quicker.
Yeah, that is a fantastic piece of advice for someone who mentors clients as well. That's almost like standing on the shoulders of giants and understanding that, but looking backwards. If there's no point of standing on the shoulders of giants if you're not going to see the vision they see for you. Because usually they have a much clearer vision for you than you can see. And that's why you need to stand on their shoulders. And I think what a fantastic piece of advice to end on. So listen, Andrew, thank you for your time today. You've shared so much. If people want to get hold of you, what's the best way they can do that?
So you could search for YoDev on Google, YoHDEV. Everything will pop up. My LinkedIn should be on there. You can search Andrew Hewitt, YoDev or development, and I'll pop up. If you want to follow me on YouTube, again, search YoDev on YouTube and you'll find all my YouTube videos. But LinkedIn is the best way to really, if you want to connect and message me directly right off the bat, LinkedIn's going to be your best shot.
Well, I'll make sure that LinkedIn is in the show notes so they could do one click and up you will pop. So Andrew, thank you very much for joining us. As I said, I knew it was going to be a great episode. You've shared so many insights for us. Yeah, I really appreciate your time today.
Thanks so much, Gary. I had fun. I appreciate you inviting me on.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast. And as per usual, if you have learned something, picked something, or even had a little bit of, that's a really good point, make sure you like it and share it. Make sure you comment so other people can see what you've learned as well. But more importantly, share the episode. Share whether you're listening on Spotify, whether you're listening on Apple or YouTube. Make sure you share so that others can learn from leaders like Andrew as well. So until next time, make sure you keep striving, make sure you keep working hard, and make sure you are profitable. See you on the next episode. Bye-bye.